The warmth of
horrible warmer stuff.
I also put the heat up.
Okay. I made a mistake last week and I said that this week was the last class. It's not. It's the second to last class. To all of you who were here last week.
I know.
I'm looking at you.
Okay,
we're here last week.
I would have asked you at the end of the day anyway.
That's extended it because I wasn't.
Yeah. So, no, I just forgot the date. So, no, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Hannah. So this week is the second to last, week. And tonight we'll be discussing, I'm sorry that Batya is not here because we're discussing an issue she's been asking me about for the last 4 weeks, about the flowers, the Judaim. But we're going to start with a question. Let's open up our Chumashim. I'll tell you in a minute. So impatient, my goodness.
She asked us to learn Torah.
Where's Zoya?
She's babysitting.
She's babysitting. Chutzpah.
Becky asked her to go somewhere. She doesn't know.
Okay. All right.
Where are we up, please?
Here, we're looking at page 155. 154, 155. Perek Lamed. Last week we spoke about the heated, raw, emotional discussion at the beginning of Perek Lamed between Rachel and Yaakov, where she says, give me kids, or I will kill myself right here and now. And Yaakov says to her, what are you mad at me for? It's not my fault. And she said, okay, well, here, take Bilhah, my maidservant, and have children from her. And if you're interested in why that conversation makes any sense at all, please hook onto the internet, and you are welcome to hear the class from last week. We had a good time with that one. So she gives Bilhah to Yaakov. Bilhah then, we see starting in Pasuk Dalet, Bilhah has a child, verse number 4. She gave Bilhah, her servant, to him as a wife. Yaakov came to her, Batar Bilhah, Vatelet Yaakov. Then she became pregnant and gave birth for Yaakov. A son, but Homer Rachel said, "Janani Elokim, the Gam Shama Bekoli Veitin Liben. God has judged me, and He heard my voice, and He gave me a son. I'll came to Ashimo Dan, so she called his name Dan. But our old Rachel Bilhah Shemkat Rachel Ben Shemil Yaakov Bilhah had a second. Bilhah Rachel's maid had a second child to Yaakov. But Homer Rachel said, Naftule Elokim, Niftalti Imachoti, Gam Yachoti." And the translation of this, if I remember, is very confusing. Sacred schemes have I maneuvered to equal my sister, and I have also prevailed. Okay, that's a good one. And she calls his name Naftali. And Leah sees Pasuk Tet. Here's the kicker. Okay, so far we see. So she gave Bilhah as a maid, as a wife to Yaakov, her maidservant, who is, for all intents and purposes, the mother of this child, of these children, of Dan and Naftali.
Well, it's Bilhah, but
Rachel
says...
For all intents and purposes, it seems like it's Rachel. That Bilhah maybe was the biological birther of this child, but Rachel is one who's giving the name. Rachel is giving the name, then chances are she had a significant hand in his raising as well. He's considered by the text, by the Torah, it seems, as Rachel's child. Leah looks at this. Unbelievable reaction she has. So it's 10. There's 9. But Taylor Leah, he am down the ledge that Leah saw that after having how many children does Leah have at this time? 4 sons. Rachel has 9 biologically on her own, but 2 surrogate children, let's say. Leah sees that she has stopped giving birth. Now, I just want to stop here because you have to listen to the timeline for a minute, okay? Altogether, how many years was Yaakov in Laban's house? 20 years in Laban's house, right? Okay. 7 years he worked and then got married. So how many years are left? I'm so bad at this. 13 years are left. Okay, he's supposed to work for another 7 years. In 13 years, 12 children are born to him from 4 different wives.
Oh, wait.
He can. He's the richest man in the county.
Did they get married after the 7 years, or was it a promise
worked 7 years. Let's go back for a minute. He said, I will work for Rachel 7 years. Laban said, great. So he works for her for 7 years, and the 7 years seemed like nothing. Remember, then they got married to Leah, and Laban's like, no, now if you want Rachel, you have to work another 7 years. So they get married immediately after Rachel's, but he works an additional 7 years.
He was kind.
Yes. And at that point, so fine. So Leah saw that she had stopped giving birth. Let's say Leah gave birth right away. So we're now in his 11th year, after four children. Let's say she had a son a year. Let's say. Okay, so now we're in his 11th year. And then Dan and Naphtali are born, 12th and 13th year. She sees that 2 years she didn't have a kid, that she stopped giving birth. Like, there's not a significant amount of time that one would assume that one is no longer able to have children, necessarily.
Well, she didn't see a gynecologist.
Well, she might have. You know, the midwives and all that kind of stuff. But she's like, okay, she wasn't able to give birth. So what does she do? So she says, I'm going to take my maid and give her to Yaakov. And, hello, you have four boys already. What could possibly be Leah's motivation in doing this? You know, it's like this. Like I imagine sort of, you know, kitchens, okay, are in my mind. I have a new kitchen. Like, I made a new kitchen, and I redid my cabinets, and I reorganized. It's now all nice and open plan. And my neighbor redid her bathroom. So now I need to redo my bathroom. Like, what is this? Or now I need to expand my kitchen. What's going on here?
Well, they were jealous.
Sibling rivalry.
Okay. On the one hand, sibling rivalry. They're jealous of each other. What other possibilities?
She wants to be supreme.
Leah does.
To be in Yaakov's eyes, this is the mother of my children.
But she already
she
is.
Already I know, but the more, you know, who knows how long this is going to go on with Rachel, you know.
Okay.
So she just wants to get back in the action.
Okay, so she sees if she's not personally having children, then... Okay, she wants to get back in the action because she personally just wants to be seen as the supreme wife. Because she is still at this point, you notice, not Ahuva.
I don't think she ever became Ahuva. Did she ever become Ahuva? Did she ever become Ahuva?
I don't think she ever becomes
Ahuva. What's the age difference between Leah and Rachel?
The Midrash says they were twins. That Leah was the older twin, but like Esav and Yaakov, because the Midrash makes a connection between them, that Leah was supposed to marry Esav and Yaakov was supposed to marry Rachel.
That's like her eyes were bad.
So, yeah, why her eyes were weak, possibly that she was crying. Although some interpretations say that means that her eyes were beautiful, were soft and tender and beautiful. So it's all in the way you look at it. But yeah, the age difference seems to have been minimal.
They used the word Rachot,
right? Rach.
Well, yeah,
Rach is used for many different ways in Tanakh, as weak, as soft, as, you know, soft words. It's used very positively with words, but it's used very negatively with a person going out to wars. Rach leva, that someone is weak of heart and can't stand it, you know, to go out to war, then he doesn't go to war. So, right, sensitive. So sensitive also could be, you know, positive or negative. So here we have Leah doing this. She could be jealous. She could be that she wants to be the supreme person. Let's put it for a minute, step back out of our human view of the Imahot, and look at the Imahot view of the Imahot, the spiritual leaders of the future of B'nai Israel. Let's imagine for a moment that there was a positive intention. What could that possibly be?
That she wants to be a
leader.
How is that positive?
Maybe she thinks she has more strength and abilities, and she's got all these kids, and she says, you know, she could be a very good mother, even though she wasn't his number one wife.
I'm sure she was.
Well, you know, and then to produce the future leaders of Israel, to influence them. And
so let's take a look in source number one, on the sheet that you don't have yet. Sorry about that. Here you go. They're double-sided, I believe, so those are both the same sheet. You need to take one. Source number one is Ramban, one of our favorite medieval interpreters of the Torah. And I'm going to start, we can start from the beginning where he poses the same question that we ask. Lo Yadati, he says, Maha Masa Hazela Leah. I don't know what this thing is that Leah is doing. The Lama Nat Nashif Khatala Ba'ala, why she gave her maid to her husband. She was not barren. There was no issue of her having children from her maidservant because she had her own kids already. And in addition, he says, not only does it have a sense to me, the Ein Derech HaNashim, Harbot Nashim Ba'aleha, basically he's saying, is Leah nuts? We don't voluntarily add wives to the picture. You know? It's like, what are you thinking? The answer is about Nixtarech Lomar, we must say, that the Imahos were Nevi'ot, that they were prophetesses, that they were able to see in the future, and they heard by spiritual communion with God, they understood that Yaakov was supposed to have 12 children come from him. The Rashta, what did Leah want? She yulo rov ha-marimni mimena o mishifchata. And what was this struggle then between Leah and Rachel to have more children, more children, more children? Not merely personal, that I want to have children. Not merely interpersonal with Yaakov, that I want to be the greater loved one. But says Ramban, it was a much larger struggle between the two of them of who was going to have more leaders of the Jewish people. An altruistic battle, if you will. As you mentioned, the possibility of that, that they each wanted to have the most number of tribes. What do you think?
Possibility.
Are we stretching it? Does it fit? Is it altruistic? Is it not? Is it good? Yeah, you're here. We're talking about the flowers. Remember the flowers? Batya was asking about the flowers for 4 weeks already. I'll move over. You can sit together. Remember Batya was asking about these flowers, how they could do this trick thing? Okay. There you go. Okay. So we gave this possibility as to why Leah gave her maidservant in addition to Rachel, that they could have been at some kind of struggle to find out who was going to be the leader of the Jewish people, who was going to be the most, who's going to have the more kids. So on the one hand, you see here from this statement from Ramban something very interesting, that both of them wanted to be the leaders of more members of Bnei Israel, of the children of Israel. On the second hand, you also see the status of the maids, that Rachel's servant's children were considered Rachel's children. Right now, what's the count? Leah to Rachel. Leah has how many children?
Four.
Rachel has
two.
After the next two verses, next two psukim, Tet and Yod, she gives Zilpah to Yaakov. Leah gives Zilpah to Yaakov. We're on page 154. But Tamar Leah, Zilpah has a child, and Leah names the child. She calls him God. Oh gosh, the names. We have to do a class one time on names, because this is just unbelievable. So he says, Ba God. You know what God means? Traitor. So she names him God. Okay. But Taylor Zilpah Shukat Leah Ben Chenil Yaakov had another child, that Tamar Leah, Bashri Ki Ashuveni Banot Bashikat Shemo Asher. What does she say? I'm lucky, I have a lot of kids. Yeah, good luck has come. That's so she named, no, that was the other one. It's my good fortune. Women have deemed me fortunate. She calls his name Asher, Asher, Ashracha, Ashrei, Ashrei Yosrei Beitacha, that we say every day. Fortunate are the dwellers of your house, God, etc., etc. Okay, now where to count? Leah?
Six.
Rachel?
Two.
Okay, who's up?
Leah.
Leah's up by four. Okay, she had a good head start on Rachel. Rachel's behind. And we get this story in the middle. Hello, totally out of the blue. Reuven's walking along. How long is Reuven? How old is Reuven at this point? Let's say there's a child born every year. Six children are born so far from the time Yaakov was married. How old is Reuven?
Eight.
Probably six. Probably six, right? Because he was born in the seventh year, so now we're in the seven and sixes. Thank you. We're in the 13th year. We have 7 years to go. Reuven is probably around 6 years old at this point. If there was a child born here, Reuven's the oldest. He's walking around in the field, la-di-la-di-da, running around outside, playing hockey on the rollerblades. He's at the time of the harvest of the wheat. Vayimcha dudaim bashadeh. He found dudaim. We're going to leave that word untranslated. Even Archville doesn't translate it. He found dudaim in the field. He brings them to Leah's mother, but Homer Rachel at Leah. Rachel is like sitting on the side. And she sees Reuven like out of the side of her eye, bringing these dudaim to his mother Leah. Rachel says, give me some of those dudaim that your son brought in. But Homer la. Leah attacks her. Isn't it enough for you that you took my father and now you're also going to take the Judaim of my son? But Homer Rachel says to her, okay, Lachim, Yishkat imach halayla, tachat Judaim v'nech. I'll trade you tonight. You have the guy tonight, I'll get the Judaim. Ve'evo Yaakov min ha-shadeh, ba'erev. Yaakov comes in from the field in the evening. Shahad with him, but take two Leah lekrato. Leah comes out to greet him, but Homer, she says to him, Elisha, though, it's my turn tonight. Ki shachor shechartikha b'dudai b'ni. I bought you, I won you at auction for the dudaim of my child. Vayishkabim abalayla hahu, and he slept with her on that evening and that night. How desperate does Leah sound here? It's so sad how desperate she sounds. Vayishma Elokim Aleya, Vataha Vatela Liyakov Ben Chamisi. Who gets pregnant?
Leia.
Now, we have a few questions here. Number one, of course, what are these Dudaim? Number two, why does Rachel want them so badly? So badly that I want you to look for a minute in source number five. That her retort, her answer, her response to Leah's attack lost her something very dear. She said, okay, let him sleep with you tonight. So Lehi touched you by Lila Zoe. It was my turn tonight. Vani, you know, they're with co-wives, they have to take turns. Vani no tunalach tacha dudei b'neich. I'm giving this night to you instead of the dudeim of your child. Ulafish is dildalab and mishkava tadit lozach tali kaverimo. Because she took this issue so lightly, she lost her privilege of being buried together with him. Now we know this is the saddest thing ever. Who's buried in Ma'amad HaMachpelah in Hebron? We have Adam and Chava. We have Sarah and Abraham. We have Rivka and Yitzchak. We have Yaakov and Leah. And Yaakov is not with the love of his wife because she died of childbirth on the way into Eretz Yisrael. She's buried outside of Beit Lechem. Because of this, now I know we deal with neshamas really, but I mean there is so much to say with this, that she's not buried with him. Very painful. So she was willing to give it up for that. These are really high stakes here. What's so great about these dudaim?
What are they? They increase fertility.
They increase fertility. A wonderful idea. However, who is proven the more fertile one after this exchange?
Leah.
Leah doesn't have the dudaim.
No. She didn't need them.
So then why was she so reluctant to give them up?
Because maybe she didn't want Rachel to be fertile.
Ah. Okay. Why would Reuven bring them to Leah, do you think? Do you think Reuven was aware of the possible fertile qualities of the dudaim?
Not at 6 years old.
Not at 6 years old.
He knew in here it says he knew his mother wanted them children.
Oh, you're reading on the bottom. That's what we call cheating in this class.
So I'm a cheater. I never said I wasn't. She's a teacher. She knows the rules.
Okay. It's that he knew that Leah wanted more children, so it was more conniving on his part as opposed to he was thinking more.
It's a lot to put on a six-year-old.
It is a lot to put on a six-year-old.
I guess my question would be, why couldn't she? How far could he have gone? Why couldn't Rachel go out and get some herself?
Right. If they were so important to her.
Yeah, I mean, how? He's a six-year-old. How far could
he have gone? What are
you saying? Mm-hmm.
It says mandrakes.
What is that?
Where does it say mandrakes?
Number five.
Oh, in the English translation
the
I gave you.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a mandrake. Okay, I'll show you. This is a great book. There's this guy in Israel named Yehuda Felix. He writes these amazing, fantastic books about flora and fauna in Tanakh. So this is called Sheva Ve'aretz V'Tanach, Nature and the Land in Tanach, Parkim Be'ekologia Mikra'it, Chapters in Biblical Ecology. And here we have, you could all see, a photograph of the Zigra'im. These big green leaves with these big yellow fruit. Those are the Judaim. Now, this is not the only place in Tanakh that the Judaim show up. They also show up in Shir HaShirim. And he has a drawing of them over here.
Is that for smelling or eating?
So that's the question of what is the purpose of the Judaim? What do you use it for? Which will be determined once we figure out what they are. Now, the standard English translation are mandrakes. I'm not a botanist, but I have no idea what mandrakes are. But I think there was something that sounded like it in Harry Potter. Any of you read Harry Potter? No?
My grandson.
My daughter.
Oh my gosh, you guys are missing out on a major
piece
of literature. It's unbelievable. She's a fabulous writer. Did you read Harry Potter? No! Oh my gosh, you
Jacob
people! So next question is assignment. It's the first 5 books.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So there actually is, I don't remember if she calls them mandrakes or mandrills or man something. These plants, that you look at it and it's like these, you know, green leaves coming up, but when you pick it up, and the root is a little teeny baby. Like a little baby man. I think she calls them mandrakes. But it's like this little teeny baby mandrake. And you have to repot them because they're growing. So you have to put them in a larger pot. But their screams are so shrill and so loud that you have to wear muffs on your ears. So you can't, because otherwise it will make you faint. And it's like a spell. And, you know, she's so creative. Unbelievable, this woman.
And anyway. Peanuts also. If you open up a peanut, you'll see a little...
A little person in there?
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm not eating peanuts anymore. I had that once with an egg.
Oh?
Yes, when I was pregnant with Shanghai, I opened an egg and there was like an almost formed. Oh. It was really
good. How did you throw it out?
I am not. I threw it out. I threw a lot of stuff out. But that was, yes.
Oh,
it was not pretty. But no blood stuff, though. Okay, this was left a little Pakistani grocery downstairs from where we live. Yeah. Okay, so what are the Judaim? So we're going to take a look on source number 3, back to Ramban. One of the things I love about Ramban, actually before we do Ramban, let's do Ibn Ezra, source number 2. What are these Judaim? Ibn Ezra lives around the same time as Rashi from Spain. I'm sure I've spoken about this earlier. Judaim Amar HaMetargim Yavuchim. He says, like, look, you see on this chumash over here that you have on your page, you have 2 translations here. You have the English translation and the Aramaic translation, for all of you who are adept at reading Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Therefore, if we want to understand really what the translation of a word is in Tanakh, the best place to look is right in this translation over here, written by Unklus, who writes this fabulous, very close to the text, to the truth translation, close to the text translation of the psukim. And what does he call it? Yevruchin. Anyone recognize
Baruch.
The shorish in here?
Baruch.
Okay. Also Reach. But they have a Reach, so Vecheniku Belashon Yishmael. Anyone here know Arabic?
A little.
Yeah? Do you ever hear of Yevruchin? It's an Arabic word for Judaim. So if you know what day it is in Arabic, I just remember Arajayun Kabirun, which means a big man. That's all I remember from my Arabic class. I had to say orange, Portugal, because I came from Portugal. But they can't say the P sound. They only say. Okay. All right. Here she says, they are called Yibruchin, and that's also the Arabic name for it. The Yeshlam Reach Tov, they have a beautiful, nice smell. Achein Katuv, HaJudaim Na'nu Reach, and Shir HaShirim, it talks about these Judaim, says that they give us a beautiful smell. And what do they look like? And this is why I mentioned Harry Potter. The Haim al Tzivat ben Adam. They are the shape of a person. Ki yesh lahem dmut rosh v'yadayim. They look like a head and hands. Let's go back to our little thing over here. Well, we can't really see it, but we could imagine that the fruit would be the head, and then maybe the leaves coming out of it could look like a hand. I don't have a better... There might be a better... I forgot to look in my Shir HaShirim at home. I'm sure that I have a better picture of it in there. That it's shaped sort of like a person. No, he says Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra, you have to realize, is a rationalist. Ibn Ezra is like a straightforward guy. He doesn't do midrashim, and he goes like this. He says, I don't know why they assist in making a person pregnant, because their nature is cold and dry. Remember the four elements of nature? I'm sure you've learned about this a long time ago. Teacher, Shakespeare, right? Four elements. We have wet, dry, hot, and cold. Yes? No? Yeah, something like that. Okay, so here he says, because its nature is dry. You know, that's like when you deal with the humors. If a person is angry, is hot under the collar, it's because he has too much heat, you have to do things to it. That's why they would bleed a person to take out some of the wet to, okay, for humors, whatever. Anyway, so he says, I don't know why they help infertility, because really their nature is cold. It's not really something that would bring fertility. It's not something warm or moist that would indicate future life. It's something that's cold and dry, he says. But from this statement, what does he assume about its qualities? He assumes that it does make a woman pregnant. He says, I don't know why it works.
It helps.
Right. I don't know why it works, he says. Okay, that's Ibn Ezra. Ramban comes in from a totally different perspective. He's like, okay, fine. Yeah, that guy says that it's there for the good smell. He says, what does Rashi say it is? And this is source number 3, and I brought you the English translation there as well. Rashi says, Dude'imer sigli. It's the flower called sigli. Uvelashon Yishmael Yasmin. This might sound familiar to you. Any of you shop at Bath and Body Works ever? You know, the night blooming jasmine smell is a really nice, light smell. It's a nice smell. Kachma Tachit Perish Rashi. This is what I found in Rashi, that this is, we're talking about a jasmine. They know him, but that's wrong, because Yasmin Bilashon Aravi Kach Shemo B'Divrei Rabotenu. It goes on this whole explanation about why Judaim are not Yasmin. Basically, he says, because Rashi went like this, Judaim are Sigli. And Sigli are in Arabic called Yasmin. So Ramban goes along and says, no, no, no. In Arabic, Yasmin is also referred to as Yasmin. There's no Sigli involved here. Okay, if you got it, good. If not, great.
Sigli? Sigli is something.
Sigli is something that we don't, that we can't, that we're not identifying at this point. That
yours
we can't identify.
Violets.
Violets, okay.
It says hope.
Something that's pretty hope to look at, something that's pleasant to smell. That's basically what they're deciding between, which one is it. And then he quotes Ibn Ezra. And then do you see the footnote number 12, which should correspond with the third paragraph in the English. Eluz Barab, he quotes right after footnote number 12, he's just finishing quoting up what Ibn Ezra said, which was source number 2 that we did, Benachon. He said, but the correct interpretation is, Kirachta Bahem Yusashia Ulitaneg. What did she want it for?
To play.
She wanted the Zidayim for delight and pleasure. To look at them, they're pretty to look at, they're pleasant to smell. Kibitzvilanet Kedarachel, lo bederacharisu oat. Why was Rachel able to have a child in the end after all was said and done? It wasn't because of her efforts. It wasn't because of her medical things that she went through, her special things. It was from purely tefillah. And the who what did Reuven bring? He either brought the leaves or the fruit, which look like apples, like we saw, they have a nice smell to them. But what didn't he bring? The root of the plant, which is what looks like the head and the arms. That's the part. But that's not what he brought. And the root is the part that people say helps pregnancy along. If that's true, and if it is true, he says, that the root does assist in pregnancy, it's by some kind of special effect. It's not by nature. In other words, by nature, like he agrees with Ibn Ezra, by nature really shouldn't help. There's nothing about it that would bring about these qualities of birth. But if it helps, it's just because whatever. So what did she want it for? She wanted it to smell nice. She wanted it to look at something nicely. And I'd like to expand my mind and suggest a possibility of the connection between the smelling and the looking at the Zuzayim and the tefillah itself. We know we have this concept that in order to really dive in well, you have to be in a particular frame of mind. Where are we in the camp right now? We're 6-2. Leah has 6 years, Rachel has 2. And as much as Rachel's 2 children through Bilha are her own, they're not her own. They're not from herself, And to daven, she is so completely overcome and overwhelmed with depression and sadness that she needs something beautiful to look at and pleasant to smell to put her in the right frame of mind to be able to daven to Hashem. Because she's so beyond the point even where she could daven to Hashem. I'm sure many of you have been to this point. I hope not. But I'm sure many of you have been. There's a point where you're so low that you cry out to God, and then there's a point that's lower than that. Does that make sense? So she needs to come back up to that point where she can daven to God again. And that's why she's so willing to give up whatever it takes to take these Zuzayim. And why does she want this child? Partly for herself, but partly because she so badly wants to be a partner in creating the Jewish people, this special unit of the Jewish people. Okay, what are we at? 8:40. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
It's 8:40, sorry. Okay, time is 8:40. Fine. The story's over. Leah has these children. An important point that Felix makes in his book is that we see that Leah has children after this and not Rachel, to prove to you that everything is from God, that magic potions and special treatments are not going to necessarily make it happen if God doesn't want it to happen at that point, which is an interesting point that he makes here, which connects very much with what Raman said, that the reason she became pregnant in the end was because of the tefillot, not because of anything she actually did. Okay, so they have these, she has these sons, a fifth child, what does she name him? Talk about a complex. God has given me my reward for giving my maidservant to my husband, so she names his name Reward, Yisachar. He has a sixth son. Again, she's hoping, God has endowed me with a good endowment, and my husband will make his permanent home with me, for I have borne him 6 sons. So she's returning to the theme that she started naming her children with, hoping to gain Yaakov's affections. So she has a sixth child. After she has a daughter, and she names her Dina. End of story with Dina. But his quarrel came at Rachel. He remembers Rachel. God remembers Rachel. He listens to her. This is what Ramban is picking up on, that God is listening to Rachel. What he's listening to are her tefillah. He opens her womb. She has a child. What does she say? God has taken away my disgrace. She names him Yosef. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. May God give me another son. Okay. Now he kasheh Rachel Yosef. When she had given birth to Yosef, this is now okay. We have Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Then we had Dan and Naphtali. Then we had Gad and Asher. Then we had Yisachar and Zvulun and Dina and Yosef. We're now 12 years after that initial 7 years. Yeah? What is that? Thank you. We're about to leave. Okay, he's in his 19th year, Yaakov's 19th year at Laban's house. We, in hindsight, know that he has 1 year left. And indeed, at this point, he comes, at this point when Rachel had given birth, Yaakov says, okay, it's time to move. Pasuk verse 25, let me go. Let me go home, give me my wife, my children, I worked very hard for them. And Laban said, no, stay, I want you to keep working. And Yaakov makes the deal. Remember the whole deal, the spotted, the striped, whatever, spotted, dotted. you know, Dr. Seuss says a thing, what's the difference between a spotted Glock and a dotted Glock or something like that, okay? So he does the whole thing. In the end, he walks away very rich. Laban is very rich. Yaakov is very rich. And it's time for them to go. It's a year later. It's the next mating season later. And he calls them out into the field, Rachel and Leah. And he says, what do you think? Should we go? And they said, yes, let's go. And he said, like, your father's being a real idiot here. And they said, okay, let's just go. And it's the day that they're leaving. I am now in Perek Lamed Aleph, which is page 162 and 63. And we have Rachel's swan song. Pasuk Yitzhak, the Laban halach l'gzozet tono, they're going to escape. While Laban is away shearing his sheep is when they're going to run away. And what does she do? V'tignov Rachel et ha-trafim asher la'aviha. Rachel steals the trafim, again we have no translation, that belong to her father. V'ignov Yaakov et leiv Laban ha-arami, and Yaakov steals Laban's heart, al-bu'i hagidlo kivarehu, without telling him that he's running away, by rachu v'chalashelo, they run away, by yakam v'yavor tanahar, they pass across the river, by yashama panav har ha-gilad, he goes towards har ha-gilad, which by the way was not named at this point yet, by yugadlo Laban b'yom ha-shlishi kivarach Yaakov, 3 days later, Laban finds out that Yaakov had run away. Why did it take 3 days for him to find out? Because this whole experiment that Yaakov carried out was a three-day walk away from Laban's house. So, Laban only discovered 3 days after he left, because one day he goes out to shear the sheep. 3 days later, he gets to Yaakov's area, and behold, Yaakov no longer is there. But what's Rachel's last thing that she does? Vayignov et ha-trafim. She steals these trafim. Why? I'm throwing this out to you. What do you think? What do you think the trefim are? And why do you think she would steal them?
Her father's idols.
Okay. Why would she steal her father's idols?
I once read somewhere, and I don't know where, that was the hope that he would stop praying to idols.
Okay.
That was why she took them. She didn't have them. How could he pray to them?
Couldn't pray to them. Why would she care?
Her father. And the grandfather of the Jewish people.
Okay, so she wants to reform him. She surreptitiously is finding him up for an anti-Israelite at home.
Right.
I'm not telling you, but guess where we're going this weekend? She steals his trefim. Okay. Says Rashi. Shafi is thinking very much like Rashi this evening. Source number 6. But she knows Rachel had trafim. She stole the trafim. Why? Her intent was to prevent her father from idol worship. Okay? Ramban has a problem with this. Implying that the trafim were idols. Ramban has a big problem with this. He's basing it on the fact that in David's house, the Psukim and Shmuel tell us that David had trafim in his house. David, Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam. What do you do with that? How do we re-explain what trafim mean in order to fit in with the interpretation or the pasuk that says that David had trafim in his house?
Maybe the trophies that he got.
Trophies, trafim trophies.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he
did. Well, you know, I had when we lived in Connecticut, there was a rabbi in our shul, Rabbi. He wrote a book called Pages of My Life. I have it, I see it in my head. Okay? Anyway, he kept a list of these Hebrew English words that were the same in Hebrew as in English. A goren is a granary. Things like that. He had several hundred words like that, I believe. So maybe if you want to translate Trefim as trophy. But Tesraman, he says they weren't actually idols that you worshiped to. But were they? Or even that, they weren't even just ornamental. There was something more than that. But they were something more than that. Look at the second to last line of source number 7. Bakarov, the closest interpretation I could really find is Mashal Rim, what they say, Shehen Kelim Kabel Hasha'ot V'Ksimu Bahem Ladat Atidut.
Oh,
gosh, weird stuff, he says. They were sundials. They were Kelim Kabel Hasha'ot. They were vessels to accept the hours, to tell time, and through them, they were able to tell the future. So then why did she steal them?
So he wouldn't be able to tell what the future brought.
Or where they were.
Yeah. Exactly. Why would she not want him to know where they were?
So he wouldn't chase them.
Right, and try to get them to come back, and what about all their children and the future of B'nai Israel and all that kind of stuff. Okay. Now, the Midrash explains to us a little bit more in detail how they would use these Tefillin to tell the future. Here we go, source number 8. You know, count on the Midrash to here we go. Lama nekrat Tefillin, why are they called Tefillin? Source number 8, Lefi shehein ma'aseh toref ma'aseh tuma, because they are treif. They're treif. And tuma, they're disgusting. They can't even say them. The keitzad hayosin, what was this terrible, disgusting thing they did to them? Maybe in Adam, and it makes me think a little bit of Da Vinci Code. Any of you read the Da Vinci Code? Okay, we have a very literate group here this evening. Okay, I'm not going to recommend it to you. Fascinating book, a lot of Christian theology in it and stuff. Very interesting book, but some stuff that was a little too bizarre for me to be able to recommend it, although it was a real page-turner. Anyway, okay, so how do you see, what would they do? Nevi'im Adam Bechor. They would bring a choice person, a firstborn child, person. B'shochtim oto, they would kill him, slaughter him. U'molchim oto b'melach, dip him in salt. U'b'shamim, and with spices. B'kodvim al-tzit zahav, they would put on a gold bud, same ruach tum'ah, the name of some vich spirit. U'manichin ha-tzit b'machshefot, they would use magic to put this bud underneath the tongue of the dead person. And they would put him into the wall, not rest him on the wall, back here. They would put him in the wall. And they wrote like candles around him. And they would bow down to him. And he would speak back to them quietly, whispering. Okay, so there's like really weird, gross, heebie-jeebie stuff going on here. Magic and toma and yuck stuff, and they would try to find the future, but this is how they would find the future, through very inappropriate, terribly horrible ways. And this is what, this midrash combines these two ideas. Number one, that it was the magic, it was the seeing of the future. And number two, on the other hand, this concept of avodah zarah, this is clearly not an accepted method of worship. Divination is something which is finding out what the future is something that is completely and totally 100,000% forbidden by Jewish law, and this is what they were doing through terrible, disgusting ways, and that was what she was trying to stop her father from doing. So what do we have now about Rachel? We've spoken, I think, about 5 or 6 weeks ago, probably, on where Rachel comes from. And before that, we spoke about where Rivka comes from. And Rachel and Rivka, remember, come from the same house. Rivka's father is Rachel's grandfather. They're coming from the same house. Do you remember the things that we said about Betuel, what he used to do? The stuff, all the sleeping around, and with the kids, with their own daughters, and all that stuff. This is like not a pleasant place that they're coming from. Yet, Rivka rises up out of it, and Rachel and Leah also rise up out of the same background. What can we say now about Rachel's intentions in general? What's driving her?
She just wants to stop all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want it to happen again.
She doesn't want to go through it. She doesn't want her children to experience it, to stay there any second longer than they have to. Her intention, she has seen the light. She has seen and she understood what the true way is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to serve God. And she sees that that's the way of Yaakov. Never mind that she and her sister are both married to him at the same time, which is really something that's not 100% kosher. But she sees that this is the way that you're supposed to keep all the mitzvot. The relationship that Yaakov has with Hashem is the kind of relationship that she wants. And Hashem speaks to Yaakov, and they have conversations, and it's a relationship of love, not a relationship of fear and being afraid of what's going to happen and dealing with magic. And it's a beautiful kind of thing. And this is what she wants to be a part of. She wants to be part of raising Klal Yisrael so much so that she gives up a night of being with Yaakov at the hopes that she could possibly be able to get that right. of being an actual mother of the children of Israel. I'm connecting these two topics of the Dudaim and the Trafim because I think we see two aspects of Rachel's personality here that are fundamental. Number one, we have something that she learned in Laban's house. At all costs, no matter how ruthless you have to be, do what needs to be done to accomplish what you think needs to be accomplished. She gave up a night with her husband so that she could hopefully have a future of Kaisel. She gave up her life, as we'll see. The story continues with the Trafim, just in case if you're not familiar with the story. Laban comes running after them. He attacks Yaakov, not physically, but he comes to him and says, what have I done that you deceived me? You led my daughters away. He says, without even a kiss goodbye. He's like really all mushy and everything. Why did you run away? And I wasn't able to give you a nice home, a nice going away party. He says in Pasuk HaChet, page 164, 165, verse 28, he says, you didn't even let me kiss my daughters goodbye. You acted so foolishly. And then he says, and why did you take my gods? At the end of Pasuk Lama, he says, Lama ganavta Elohai, why did you steal my gods? And Yaakov was like, what are you talking about? I mean, all the other stuff, okay, fine, but I don't know what you're talking about here with the gods. So he says, trying to be magnanimous, he says, I never stole anything from you, and I want you to know, if you find the gods among my people, whoever has it should die. What a terrible, horrible thing, because how did Yaakov live his life? Complete and total honesty. Yaakov is what we call the Midah of Emet. Titain Emet LeYaakov. Yaakov is the Midah, the quality of truthfulness. Complete and total honesty.
After
straight down the line. Even though he
stole
the bracha. You should listen to that here. Did we tape it? I don't know. Go see if we taped it. That was a good one. Straight and narrow is Yaakov. And here, somebody in his camp would go dare, I'm sure nobody would dare to go against the ideals that I uphold. And he didn't know, says the Torah. He says, Pasuk Lam, that in Asher Tzimtzad Alohecha lo yechia neged achenu akel lecha mayim adi v'kach lach v'lo yada Yaakov v'yachel g'natam. Whoever took it should die. Parenthesis says, the Torah, Yaakov didn't know that Rachel had taken them. Laban comes to Yaakov's tent and Leah's tent and the tent of the other two women, and he didn't find it. Vayetzi me'ohel Leah, he leaves Leah's tent for Yavoba ohel Rachel. The Torah is great at building up suspense. And he comes to Rachel's tent. Rachel lakrat ha-trafim. She had taken the trafim, v'tasimein b'char ha-gamal. She put it under the pillow of the camel. V'tasev Aleihem, she was sitting on them. Couldn't have been so big. Vayimashesh Lavan as kol ha'ohel v'lo matzah. He felt around through the whole tent and he couldn't find it. Vatomer alaviyah, she says to her father, Al yichar de'enei Adoni, please don't be angry with me. Ki lo uchal lakum panacha, I can't stand up. Ki dach nashim ni, because I have the way of women now. He looked and didn't find the trafim. Yaakov totally flies off the handle and says, so you see, nobody had it. Fine. And in the end, we learn that what a tzaddik says is so strong that what he says is taken care of and happens for sure. And when Yaakov said that whoever took it should die, Rachel died in giving birth to Binyamin. So we see about with Rachel, number one, that she gave up her right to be buried with her husband. She gave up her right to life for what she felt was the most important thing. And what was the most important thing? The future of the Jewish people. Not the future of her children. Not the future of herself. But the future of the Jewish people. And the future of the way in which her husband lived his life day to day. That was her focus. And that was her goal. Everything was l'shem shemayim. Everything was for the sake of heaven. Now, with that in mind, one thing that we have to think about, do the means always justify the ends? And I'm going to leave you with that question. That form is tonight. Well, have a good week.
Well, thank you.